You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental and MLSsoccer.com. You're watching us on YouTube. You're listening to us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're not watching us, get on YouTube. If you're not listening to us, download on your podcast. I am David Goss, joined today by Charlie Davies and Kalen Carr, the all-star squad, my high-scoring forwards of my heart. Thank you so much for joining me, Kalen. You seem skeptical.
Well, you know, we've done this before. I've heard this before from you. Chuck has heard this before, the Kai Kamara thing. So whatever, it's fine. Let's move on. I'm ready to move on. I think Chuck is
forgive,
as well.
Forgive, but we don't forget.
Do you not feel like my management gets the best out of you, though? Like, it feels like you've performed better, maybe, since I told Kai he was the apple of my eye.
Really? I don't know. I'm not sure if my performance has gone up. I think I've been pretty consistent throughout and, you know, not too many highs, not too many lows.
I think he broke the trust is what happened. You know,
and I'm just trying to find the buttons to push, Charlie. What? Like, we have a long layoff. Mm-hmm. We're isolated. So you're just doing individual training. I'm just trying to find the way to knit this team together on the fly quickly
Sounds like an old school coach approach. That's all I'm going to say.
The questioning. Listen, Kalen, I'm not saying you're messy, but you could be our messy. You could be at that messy level.
Now you're just, this is too much.
Yeah. Now he's lost. He lost the locker room. You lost the locker room. It's done.
That was quick.
Yeah.
I'll just leave. You guys can do the rest of the show without me, right?
All right. Let's go. Well, right. From Atlanta, Georgia. No, go ahead. You got this, Gus.
We've got MLS Today presented by AT&T coming up with Kalen, with Charlie, with Doyle, with Susanna. Actual host and manager that they like to play under. So that should be a way better show. It's going to be pre and post game for every single quarterfinal game because we are down to the quarterfinals and the MLS is back tournament. So you've got the post game presented by Audi and MLS Today presented by AT&T. We also still have our virtual fan parties going on. So you can get to that through your clubs. If you've been watching, you see the giant scoreboards behind the goals in every game. And you've noticed like Frankie Hayduck and Benny Failhaber and Jimmy Conrad, I'm pretty sure Ike was on during the Minnesota game, talking to people in the back of a soccer game. You can be a part of that. And it'll start coming to the broadcast as well. Kalen, you're going to jump on the Atlanta one since you're an Atlanta fan?
What?
Since you're currently in Atlanta.
Goss, have you been on the Jumbotron? And what do you think of that whole integration kind of overall?
I have not been on one. I like to keep my viewing styles kind of private.
Okay. What's going on with that?
Yeah. It's just like, it's just mine, you know? I don't need everyone else to start copying me. Sometimes I get out on the back porch, the lights are on, you have the New York City skyline. That's just my own time, you know?
Sounds
I like
romantic.
To appreciate that. But I think it's been cool. It's been a cool way, I think, for fans to feel connected because I know a lot of fans who have seen each other up there, texting, tweeting about it, all that stuff, which is just a cool way to... You know, we're all stuck apart to feel like we're coming back together and being a part of the groups. I know Charlie, obviously, the Revs had the drive-in viewings. We've seen San Jose do that. I think Columbus did that as well. Recently, a lot of teams. That's been pretty cool as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Revs started the trend.
Okay.
Oh. In a massive stadium. That felt right. Watching that, I said, the New England Revolution started a global trend. Mark that down on the calendar. Put that in the history books. Let's go.
Wow.
I'm glad they started something because they are currently home, no longer in the tournament.
Yeah. Pull up
after
the car.
Losing to the Philadelphia Union, who will play Sporting KC Thursday night. So tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. We previewed that game last show, so go back and listen to it if you want a little bit more between these two teams. We will mention one thing, but the other games are Orlando LAFC on Friday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on FS1 and Unimas. Saturday, we've got a doubleheader. San Jose against Minnesota, 8 p.m. on ESPN2 and on ESPN Deportes. And then you swap over to FS1 and 2DN, 10:30 p.m. for NYCFC Portland. Some delicious matchups coming up before we get into all those previews. We will have Chase Gasper coming on from Minnesota United. He will enter the belly of the beast. He will come into our space and tell us why we've been wrong and questioned and all those things. I'm just kidding. Chase, like, one of the nicest people ever. It's going to be a lot of fun. He's going to be checking in from the bubble. And before we get to the game previews, I wanted to ask you guys, rumors coming out today, as they've been over the last few months, about Mark McKenzie potentially going on a transfer to Celtic. Giants of Scotland, we've heard Brendan Aaronson's name connected there. We've heard Busio rumored, a few European teams as well. Taylor Twellman breaking some of that news earlier. Charlie, you made the move from United States to Europe as a player. When you look at this process for Mark McKenzie, is that the right move? What's should be his main thought process?
Well, when you're going into a major career decision move like this, it's all about who's bringing you over. What are the intentions? And I think it's important that Mark McKenzie have a conversation with the head coach, with the manager, and say, where do you envision me in your squad? Where's my roof? Where's my ceiling? What do I need to work on? How am I going to help your squad? How are you going to help me? It's kind of an understanding of what his career ambitions are versus what the coach has in mind for Mark McKenzie. In my opinion, Celtic is not the right place for him. I think he needs to go to a league where he's going to have the ball a little bit more. They're going to be in possession. A team that, because you got to also put into perspective what the U.S. men's national team is going to look like and how you want the styles to kind of be similar. As far as Greg Berhalter wants his center backs to be comfortable on the ball, they're going to get a lot of touches. They want to keep possession. I think it'd be more beneficial for Mark McKenzie that he goes to a place like Bundesliga, or he goes to a league, another good starting league for Mark McKenzie could be Belgium, playing at a club like Anderlecht, where you're going to get go to the Champions League. You know, you're going to be winning the league, you know, playing against quality competition. Going to France is another league where you're going to be tested. It's a very pacey league. There's a lot of players with skill and pace, and also the technique. It's got to be there to be in the Liga and to play. So I think that would be a perfect spot for him. Celtic, the reason why I don't think it would be a good place for him is because the quality of the league is poor considering the other leagues in Europe. And it's just long ball. It's get the ball, send it long. The playing aspect is not there when you're comparing it to La Liga, the Prem, Bundesliga, Liga. It's quite a drop off. And I think he needs to be playing quality competition every week and playing against different types of players. In Scotland, you're facing the similar striker, I think, week to week. It's players who are going to be elbowing you, fighting, grabbing, just, you know, looking to break through, because Celtic is by far the best team. So typically you're just dealing with long balls. And, you know, of course, there's a benefit to going to Celtic because you're playing at a massive club and all eyes are on you. But as far as the quality of competition from week to week, it's not going to be there like it would be in other leagues. And I just feel like there are better clubs for Mark McKenzie.
Kaelin, for you, for Philly, they've been open about the fact that they want to sell. They want that to be part of the identity of the club. They want to win with these guys, but they don't want to hold on to Brendan Aaronson and Mark McKenzie. How do they handle this transition? How do they handle the sale? What does the numbers have to look like? What does the process have to look like? And then how do they handle it as a club?
Well, I'll be interested to see what happens with this and Brendan as well, and a lot of the young players in MLS, because I'm not exactly sure how the global market is going to be impacted by coronavirus. And we've kind of seen it adversely affect teams across the world. But as far as like the transfer market and whether when is the right time to move on as a young player in MLS, I'm not sure what the answer is. You're clearly seeing both of these guys develop here. But I think sooner than later, for both of these guys, they're ready to make this jump. When you see Brendan Aaronson and his development, I don't see any reason why he couldn't play regularly or be a valuable squad player in the Bundesliga right now. And when I see the same thing for Mark McKenzie. The one reason I would say Mark could fit in Celtic is because it's such a big club and because it has it's clearly the best team. I don't think he would struggle, like to Charlie's point, with any of that physical play. I think he would be able to handle that quite well. And then we've seen in the past, he could use that as a jumping off point to the Premier League or other leagues as well. And yeah, I think as far as his overall development, I could see there may be a better choice. But as far as a launch pad and an entry point into Europe and also to break his way into the national team, like, I still think that although Greg Berhalter looks at this, looks at MLS and is a product of it in a lot of ways, I do think it is different when you see, especially in the center back position, guys who have gone abroad have gotten sort of a leg up in a lot of ways on competition. So getting meaningful minutes and becoming a regular abroad, I think would do a lot for him as well with the national team too.
I think when it comes down to it, you just want to see the best young American players in the best situation. And so Mark McKenzie is 21 years old as a center back. That's young when you're competing against experienced clubs and players across Europe. But if he goes to an Ajax, where they're famous for developing young players and selling them on, because Celtic, let's be honest, if Celtic's interested in you, that's not the only club that's interested in you. There are multiple clubs taking a look at Mark McKenzie. Celtic might be the front runner because they've maybe expressed more of an interest to Philadelphia Union, but you can believe that there are more clubs that are looking at Mark McKenzie as a possible investment. And for me, I just want to see him in a smaller league, or not necessarily a smaller league, but a team where they're going to play better competition and a team that's probably higher in the table, a top two team who also plays in Europe. So for me, a Mark McKenzie is and Brandon Aaronson should be with clubs that they're going to get a good amount of playing time, but also they get a taste of European competition.
And cue deep internet Celtics fans coming after us on the internet. Oh, now. Disrespects the boys. Or maybe that one.
Hey, I love Celtics. I mean,
the other one.
No, Celtic. Celtic is not what it used to be as far as like the appeal of going to Celtic, because the league has dropped off considerably after Rangers went into administration. It kind of threw everything off. So you're talking about competing against clubs like Aberdeen and St. Mirren and Kilmarnock. Like
that Hibs, baby.
That's
on the hearts.
That's not appealing to me. Like when Celtic had Henrik Larsson and they're competing in Champions League every year, and they, you know, they were in the group stage, they were getting out sometimes out of the group stage, then you're like, ah, that's Celtic. And you move from the most logical move is from Celtic to the Premier League, because you're already over there. That's kind of similar style. You have success with Celtic, Champions League, and you move to the Prem. Now football's changed.
You know what is appealing? Orlando LAFC, 7:30 p.m. on Friday night on FS1 and Unimas. That's where you get your games in your face on those channels. We didn't talk LAFC Seattle. We don't have to get into it a lot. But, Kalen, you've watched this team for a few years. They come to Orlando. They're still favorites. No Carlos Vela. And they drop a 4 spot on the MLS Cup reigning champions. How is this team still so dangerous?
Well, look at where they finished last year. And, yes, I know Seattle knocked them out in the playoffs. But they were 16 points clear in the regular season. So the gap between LAFC and the rest of the league was quite far to begin with. And yeah, Carlos Vela probably accounts for more than those 16 points, but you'd have to say that this team they were the best team by a large margin. So I think the system suits Carlos, but it wasn't built all around him. It wasn't necessarily hey, just give the ball to Carlos, or maybe the way we've seen, you know, Joseph trying to mask some of the issues, or Zlatan in the past. It's set up to function as an organism. And when one piece drops out, not everything else doesn't crumble behind it, right? It still fits. The puzzle piece is still there. It's just, you just have to plug in place a little bit. And then you also add in BWP, who I think has been a really good signing for them. I don't think that's really a take or that exciting or interesting. It's just, but it is a bit of a surprise, because I thought he would be useful, and I thought he would be able to contribute in moments and in big moments throughout the year. But he fits better than you'd think. I mean, I think he can actually make this team potentially better when Carlos Vela comes back. And I wouldn't assume that he's necessarily just going to drop to the bench, because he gives them something different, where his movement in the box, getting on the end of things, and just finishing the action he's lethal. And even a little bit more than that, where he was able to kind of square a guy up and get off a shot. So I've been really impressed with what they've done, as everybody has. And I think they're the clear favorites, of course, going in. But it almost was like we forgot that for a little bit because they did show some frailty or moments where they could concede goals. But they can win in so many different ways. And when you have a guy like Diego Rossi, too, he has stepped up and been the best player in the tournament. So he's been deadly. So LAFC, yeah, they're back on a roll. And when you look at this match against Orlando, Orlando is a tough team, and I think they have a lot going for them, but it'd be hard to imagine a path forward in, and unless they really sort of button down the hatches. But I just don't see Orlando doing that. And if it turns into a shootout, I think LAFC has a little bit too much going forward.
Interesting, because we know the game plan. There's only really one: sit deep, counter. But you would think Nani gives you that ability 1v1 against a Blackman or Jakovic to have an outlet. And then you've got Mueller on the other side if they can stay high to some extent. And as you said, that means Pereira's probably going to have to drop deep and defend. But Charlie, you'd assume there's a pathway for Orlando.
There is. I mean, every team has a chance, especially in the tournament. But it's got to be a balance. Oscar Pereira is not just going to sit back and park the bus. I think he believes in his players. He believes in the quality in the final third. And you have players like Nani. You're not going to defend. You're not going to just sit back and defend. So Nani, Mueller, they have to be influential getting in behind the LAFC backs. And LAFC are going to throw numbers forward. They're not going to change their game. It's playing with a certain tempo, a certain passion when they have the ball. And so when the ball does turn over, that transition game for Orlando is going to become really crucial, because they got to get into the attacking half and then establish possession, because you can't just, you know, go full gung-ho counterattack with this LAFC team, because that's where you get burnt. So I think it's getting possession, establishing that comfort on the ball, and making LAFC defend. Because if there's any question mark on this LAFC team, it's their back line. So you got to test them and test them early.
But here's my problem for Orlando is when we have seen teams be successful against them, their wingers have had to defend. If you go back and watch that game where Seattle beat them in the tournament, I mean, Jordan Morris was like digging balls out of in his own box. Same with Ladero. I mean, you have to come back, because if you allow numerical advantages for LAFC, I mean, 11 on 11, they're a problem. But if you take out Nani and Chris Mueller from the equation and just sort of park them to be able to counterattack, you're now going into a massive hole where you're going to start allowing numbers and overloads and the way that they move the ball. So Nani and Chris Mueller are going to have to defend through large stretches of this match. And then the question is, can they still be as effective being two-way players instead of being able to sort of hang out, look for their moments, and attack? So that's really where I think Orlando's going to have trouble is if those two guys don't come back and defend in the way that they need to in this match. If anybody on that squad doesn't against LAFC, you're going to be really up against it.
The wild card for me is Tesho Akindele for this Orlando side, because Dom Dwyer's out, and you need Tesho to not only continue to make those runs, try and stretch LAFC's back line, but he needs to be effective in front of goal. If he gets one or two chances, he's got to finish. And then the hold-up play, being a link, being a player who can draw defenders out of space, they need him to do all of that, plus defensive work, which he's shown. He's committed to working on both sides of the ball. And I think they need him to be even more of a presence defensively than he is offensively. But Orlando, with Oscar Pereira, the way they're playing right now, the confidence, they have a shot. Don't come out. But this LAFC side is quite the team right now.
I said it coming into the tournament, but these are moments Oscar Pereira lives for, like to get his team up, everyone questioning him. They have no chance. They've got players playing on confidence, some young guys who he's telling them that he believes in them and they can get this done. And then legends like Nani and stuff. We're going to learn a lot about those center backs too. That was one of the big upgrades. Antonio Carlos coming in. They've been good, but this is the hardest test there is in MLS. I'm going to make you guys make predictions today. Sorry. And then I'm going to make you make top fives, and we're going to put all of that in a capsule, and we're going to open it in 20 years, and we're going to laugh in your faces. Caitlin, prediction and why?
You want me to go top five as well?
Your top five predictions for this matchup. What are the five results you think that happened in order?
Well, I'm thinking 4-3 LAFC, 2-0. No, all of them are LAFC. I think LAFC wins this one. I think, Orlando have had a great run. And I would say if they were almost had any other matchup in this, I would probably feel pretty good about maybe even picking them to move on. But against LAFC right now, I'm not going against them. Not even close. Well, I'm not saying the game won't even be close, but I'm not even really tempted to go against to go against LAFC right now.
I like that. I like the way you ended that one. LAFC for me as well. They're just so dynamic. When that attack is running at you and hitting you from every different angle. You talk about Brian Rodriguez, how he's starting to get his confidence and starting to get going and finding himself within this team and the dynamic. Diego Rossi is Diego Rossi. I mean, he's really put on the team on his shoulder, saying, Carlos Vela isn't here, but I'm here. And this LAFC team is built to sell him on. And it's probably the best case scenario with Carlos leaving this, not being able to participate in this tournament, is allowing Diego to go out and show it what he can do on his own in the final third. That he doesn't have Carlos Vela there to bail him out. So when they do sell him, because he was the investment, that was always the plan, was to have him develop here and sell him for a large fee. You lose him, but you get Carlos Vela back. And Carlos Vela was always a long-term plan to stay. He was not looked at as a sell-on investment because he's up there in age. You know, he's over the hump, which is 30. So when you're over that 30 mark, you're there for the long haul. For Diego Rossi, it was always to sell on. So this, I think, is the perfect environment and the atmosphere for Diego Rossi to show what he's capable of, and then to sell him on for a larger fee.
Well, we're going to go 3-for-3. I'm going to take LAFC as well. But to Kalen's point, I think it's actually going to be closer than the Seattle game was. The way Orlando's playing, the confidence they have, and I think they do have pieces in central midfield with Seba Mendez and maybe Urso to kind of like make things difficult in places. But I don't think this LAFC team's the most entertaining team to watch in MLS history. They may not be the best. They may not beat every other team. We did our Mount Rushmores, all those things. Toronto, DC, all those. But this team's wild. They're so impressive. So that one Friday night, good way to get your weekend started. And of course, you can watch these two on MLS Today, presented by AT&T pregame and presented by Audi postgame. So all of your coverage coming at you with these two. And then Saturday, we've got a doubleheader starting out 8 p.m. Eastern time, ESPN2. And ESPN Deportes San Jose against Minnesota. And we all picked LAFC. So good bulletin board for Orlando, but nothing compares to the bulletin board that we give to Adrian Heath, the gaffer, and Minnesota United. We do it just for them.
Oh, yeah.
They're able to knock off Columbus. Let's go to a guy who knows all about that. Our AT&T call to the field, Chase Gasper coming into the belly of the beast, defying the haters. No one wanted Minnesota to win. I don't even know if Minnesota fans did. And Chase, you guys proved everyone wrong. How happy are you to prove us wrong?
Yeah. I'm really happy that our team got to win that game. It was a very hard-fought game. That Columbus team was, you know, awesome. They proved it in the group stages, so we knew it was going to be a challenge. And I'm just really happy we ended up winning the game.
And are we? Do we get some credit for the win? Like, who is out here questioning you guys?
All right. To clarify the comments. So since I've been here, the club and our team has really used the underdog theme as motivation. And we did that all last year, and it's the same theme this year. And so we were shown some, I don't know what the websites are, but like Vegas odds, anywhere we can find some, you know, motivation, inspiration. The coaches, the staff will kind of dig up clips or whatever stats that show us as the underdogs. And we like that. We use that to our advantage.
I like that.
So, and that was also the theme in like the pregame speech and halftime. So I was just continuing the theme, but, you know.
So it never gets old.
It was never directed at anybody. There's no disrespect or malice in it. It was just solely motivational purposes for our team.
No, I think we're now all part of this victory. So I think it feels good for all of us.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to play our role. Real quick, I want to ask you, at playing on that back line. You had the defender of the year last year, Nyko Parra, who's not been down with you. The team still performed defensively, though, throughout this competition. What's the change? What's it been like? What's the changes been like for the back line, and what's been so successful?
Yeah, losing Nyko Parra, like you mentioned, defender of the year. I mean, that's a huge loss, and that's going to affect any team. But I mean, everyone has been just amazed at how much Jose Aja has stepped up to the plate. He's been phenomenal this tournament, one of our best players. And so we're all happy to see Jose succeed. But I think that just speaks volumes to the character of this club and this team that, you know, even when you lose a top guy, a top dog like Ike, that, you know, the next guy is really, he's ready to step in and fill his shoes and do the job just as well. And so I think that speaks volumes to the depth and character of this team. And we're really happy for him.
Chase, I don't think anyone's ever questioned your defense, the back line for Minnesota. For me, it's the attacking end of things. To me, up from the naked eye, it seems like it's a little predictable. How have you guys been able to try and implement ideas in a different attacking philosophy instead of just going down the right side, Metinier, Ethan Finley, trying to create something? How do you continue to score goals in different ways moving forward?
I mean, this tournament, it's really tough because, you know, you're not just playing your opponent, you're playing against the Heat as well. And so I think we've rotated all of our forwards with Mason, Luis, Aaron. They've all played and they've all done a phenomenal job. And we've lost Kevin Molino, our attacking mid, and Hassani stepped in that role. So just with so many moving pieces, different guys stepping in and out, I think it's difficult to develop an attacking rhythm because that's what a lot of attacking is that chemistry, that rhythm. But I just think it's the grittiness of this team is how we win games. You know, it's not necessarily going to be the most beautiful wins or the most fun to watch, but it's just grind till the end, work your tail off, and where there's a will, there's a way. And I think we've proven that to be true.
Hey, I had Minnesota at third to start the season as prediction. That's all I'm going to say. I had Minnesota at third before COVID-19 hit. So that's all I'm going to let you know.
But a lot of the picks for Minnesota was with the production coming of Luis Amaria. You get to play against him in training. We haven't seen him as much as we'd like because of the way the world is and everything that's happened. Take us inside a little bit. What does he do well? What makes him dangerous?
He's super dynamic, and he's very smart with the runs he makes. That's what I think separates him from a lot of guys is a lot of the MLS forwards, a lot of them are like big post-up guys, or they're, you know, just running behind, use their speed, whereas Luis is big and strong, so he can do both. He can post up, lay off the ball. But I think it's the runs that he makes in behind and makes into the box are what make him, you know, such a good player. And he's been a phenomenal addition to the team, obviously on the field, but off the field as well, where all the guys like him. He's super friendly guy. We've become great friends in the short time that we've known each other. And I'm really happy he's part of this team.
Chase, you've become one of the most dependable, consistent performers for Minnesota and across the league. When you watch, I've really been impressed with how you carry yourself on the field. You're always competing, fighting. You earned your first cap with the U.S. Men's National Team. It's no secret, Greg Berhalter's down there. Have you guys had any conversations? And how has that cap, you know, prepared you for this year and so on to continue to progress and take your game to the next level?
So to answer the first part, I have seen him after, I think it was after our second game against RSL. Talked to him and the other staff a bit after the game, and always great to see them. And in regards to earning the cap, I mean, it was truly a dream come true. And I mean, I know you know the feeling. And so it's what, you know, every kid, when you grow up playing soccer, that's what you dream about, is playing and representing your country. And so You know, I just thank God, my coaches and all my teammates for helping that make happen, helping that come true. But also, I mean, it just motivates you like beyond belief that once you get up there and you see that next level and that competition and the level at practices, and it really opens your eyes and you're like, wow, you know, I want to be at this level all the time. And
yep.
I want to be the best at this level. And I want to prove to all these guys that, you know, I'm the guy here. So I think it reignites that fire within to, like you said, every day at training, just grind away, work your tail off, and just try to stay at that top spot for as long as you can and dominate at that spot.
You got the bug. It's contagious. You got the bug. It's contagious.
Not the other bug that everyone else is talking about. We're talking about the national team. Not the coronavirus one. But for you, Chase, you mentioned that work, that experience. What was 2020 going to look like for you? What were the things that Chase Gasper was going to do to take the next step? Obviously, a lot of it's been thrown off, but what was in your mind? What have you been talking about? What have you been focusing on?
I mean, I think it's always the same. I'm never really going to change who I am or what I do. I think, it's just hard work and going into every practice saying, I'm going to be the best version of myself today, and I'm going to improve my game in some aspect, in some capacity today, whether it's, you know, my first touch, my crossing, defending, just going in every day saying, I'm going to improve a little bit. And as the days add on, you grow as a player. And I think that's what, you know, takes you to that next level. So it was just continuing that mindset of improving and working my butt off every single day.
Chase, as you look ahead to your quarterfinal matchup with San Jose, a team that's, you know, flying high, has a lot of confidence right now, and presents some unique challenges. What have you guys looked at so far as how you match up against them, and how is preparing for a team like that maybe different than another team you might play?
Yeah, this team is really different the way they play. It's unlike a lot of the things we've seen, but they're in our conference, so we know these guys pretty well. And on a personal note, I know a lot of them are friends with these guys, so it's going to be a great matchup. You know, they're riding high, like you said. They've been, you know, one of the most entertaining teams to watch, just in terms of their comebacks. And you know, similar to us, those guys work so hard. They're very fit, so you know, they deserve to be here just like we do. So we're looking up to the matchup, and so 2 days out, we haven't really gone over the specifics yet at practice, but I mean, we have a good idea just from our history playing against them, and it's just going to be that same mindset when in advance.
Chase, you've faced a number of dynamic attackers in this league. Who would you say has been the most challenging? Who gives you a problem where you're like, oh, I gotta go up against this guy, it's going to be a long game?
Yeah, there are a lot of those guys, especially in the West. But the biggest problem I had was Sammy Nicholson on Colorado Rapids.
Okay.
He's those light, shifty guys that are like water bugs out there. They're the hardest for me to go up against. So I think he was the most challenging.
You had to go against Diaz in the last game for a little bit, then penalty kicks to get the win. What was that experience like for you? How nervous were you? I was so nervous. Penalty kicks, no matter who's taking them anywhere, make me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
What was it like being in it?
It's definitely nerve-wracking, but when it's within your control and you have a say in it, it eases the pressure a lot, because especially penalty kicks. I don't think I'm the best penalty kick taker, but when it comes to deciding a match, I'd rather have a say than not have a say.
Mm-hmm.
So after the game, our coach just asked who wants to take a penalty. So I raised my hand, and I'm glad I did.
had you taken one in the pros or in college? When was the last time you took a pen?
I couldn't even tell you. I don't know. I wasn't. it was Amar Sadich at Maryland. He was the penalty kick taker. And then at UCLA, I wasn't even like the top 10. So, my freshman year at UCLA, we beat UNC in the quarterfinals, and I think I took like the seventh or eighth. Okay. So I wasn't top 10. Never mind.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
PK shootout. Yeah.
It took a while.
Tyler Miller obviously made a huge save. And then the celebration. And I noticed some guys with mustaches, and you're not part of that. What's going on here?
I mean, I got like the underbeard going. I'm all neck beard. I cannot grow a mustache to save my okay. life. So
I'm with you.
Yeah.
So you're going like Amish look. Just yeah, like pure, exactly. pure luck. Yeah, hair.
Channeling my Northeastern heritage. But it's been you know, the bubble life. Facial hair is like one of the fun things that we have to look forward to, is seeing who's going to come out with a mustache or like a chin strap or whatever facial hair they shaved that morning. So turns out a bunch of our guys, they like the mustache look on them. And, you know, after that save and that performance, I like it too. And I think that was such a funny celebration, and everyone had a good laugh at that. So it's been a good time making the most of this bubble life.
It feels like a very Minnesota look to go with that.
Yeah. You mentioned with the lumberjack gloves yeah. that he has on.
Exactly. Paul Bunyan style. You mentioned Luis Amarillo being there for a little bit, and you've become fairly close, and the team has a heavy Hispanic influence that's come in. I've heard you've been on your Duolingo, working on it a little bit.
I mean, I don't have Duolingo. I haven't been on that app, but yeah, I've been working on my Spanish a lot, just because, you know, the league, so there's such a predominant Latin presence. And so, but mostly because I just think I it's a tough situation for these guys to come from a different country. They don't speak the language, you know, everything's new to them. And so I think helping them bridge that gap of just speaking their native tongue is, it's going to make them feel a lot more welcome and help them out a lot. So
top man.
That's why I first started doing it, but now it's just kind of, I've become one of their hermanos. So
yay, there you go. And then you probably want to, you know, maybe play in the Liga one day. So
there you go.
Yeah. Maybe, hopefully.
Are you just learning just from talking to guys, just from, you know, trial by trial?
It started when I was younger. I was on this team called, ironically, it was called Team America, and I was the only non-Latin player on the team. And everyone was like El Salvadorian, Honduran in our area. And so that's actually like where I learned most of my Spanish. And they said that Chase was too American of a name, so my name became Pedro for a while. And yeah, everyone on this team, all the parents called me Pedro off the field. And so,
wow.
Now I can't see you as Chase anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, Pedro steps up to the penalty spot.
And I was a fan of it. And so that's where I attribute most of the Spanish to. And, you know, it's not very formal. There's a lot of words that, you know, that you probably shouldn't know, but
yeah,
it's part
of the process.
Those are the most important ones. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what I attribute the Spanish to.
Pedro Gasper not using a lot of usted in his conversations right now in the Minnesota United locker room, but whatever is happening has been working. It's been awesome to watch you guys do your thing in the group stage and throughout. And for you, I met you at the combine, and talking to you there and where you've come now, you've been a great guy. You're a great part of this league, and I'm really glad to see you doing your thing. So keep it up. Good luck. And once we get off with you, we'll just rip Minnesota United for a little bit. Adrian will cut that up and he'll send show it to you on Saturday. So we got you.
All right. Yeah. We're going to need all the help we can get.
Swear to Pedro. Hey,
Chase, if they play us in the locker room, at least speak up in our defense. Come on, man.
Yeah.
I will.
All right. Swear to Pedro.
Thanks so much to Chase Gasper once again for joining us for our AT&T call to the field. They are still in the bubble, still doing their thing after knocking off another favorite in Major League Soccer, one of the big boys in Columbus Crew.
Guys, can I just say, I was surprised actually from Chase saying that they are playing the videos and putting up like Vegas odds.
This right here.
In the locker room, because I mean, I'd been talking about it, and Chuck and all of us, about saying, I think this is something he's doing just with the media as sort of a, you know, kind of just like to rib and have fun. But
He's taking that into the locker room.
He's taking it into
and
the
using
locker
room. And using it as motivation. So I was pretty surprised to hear that.
It really wants like every bone in my body is like, oh, like let's pick Minnesota now because Chase is such a great guy. But
oh my God, how can you pick? Yeah.
Chase is how can you pick against him? That's what he does. But, they kill you with kindness.
Unfortunately, that's
Minnesota nice. Yeah.
They've been doing it since, I don't know, 1867. I don't know the foundation of Minnesota that well. But you brought it up, Kalen, to him, and he smiled like San Jose is a different beast. Mm-hmm. It's Columbus dominating possession. You can sit deep. You know exactly where the ball's going to be to San Jose, which is you could call it organized chaos or you could call it unorganized chaos. How does it fit up against this Minnesota team?
Well, I think it fits up well, and partly because – this San Jose team, I mean, Chase was talking about the fitness of their squad, and but I think they've been hit a little bit by injuries. And when you look at this San Jose team, the way they are able to move about the pitch and the fitness and that the energy that they put into a match that it would take to play that system, really impressive. And then you also look at their depth, and that's where I start to see, okay, San Jose is going to wear you out. They're going to run you down. And in a tournament like this, I think where not every team has their legs underneath them, or even now I'm starting to see some teams starting to wear down a little bit. A team like San Jose, that depth starts to be tested and starts to be their strength. And they're continuing to bring guys like Wando, MLS all-time goal scoring leader off the bench. And he's continuing to get goals. And then Shea Salinas and Tommy Thompson and Danny Huson, like they have a ton of weapons mm-hmm. that are coming off the bench. So I think that is going to make it a little bit more difficult for Minnesota United as they look ahead towards this match.
Charlie, I'm with you.
San Jose, the way they play, and Jackson Ewell and Judson in the midfield, I give them the nod because of you have Judson
over and Ozzy and Asani yes, and Gregory.
Yes, I do. They're just, I think they're with Jackson Ewell and Judson, you get a little bit more of players who could cover a little bit more ground. And distribution wise, I think great. Jackson Ewell is just sound right now. They're in sync. They know how to attack opponents. They have their identity. They know what they want. And Minnesota, like Chase said, there's no identity. There's no philosophy when it comes to attacking. It's just grind, play the game out, grind it. Grind it out till we were the victors. That always comes to an end because that can only get you so far. That's why I love this game because every team has a shot, every chance has a chance. And with Minnesota, similar to like the Cincinnati defense approach, you know, we're going to defend first, then, you know, look to play after, whether it's counterattack set pieces. That's always been their strong point, especially with Ike Opara on the field. Without Ike, they're still defensively strong. They're still great on set pieces, but they don't have that X factor. And for San Jose, you have Vaco, who is an X factor, who played phenomenally in that Royal Salt Lake match. And you throw in Chris Wondolowski coming off the bench. If you do need a goal, and you have Jackson Ewell, you have Judson, you have Christian Espinoza, who I think has been also a huge plus for them this tournament and has shown quality. I just feel like San Jose has everything going for them. You talk about the team chemistry aspect as well. All the teams there right now who have been there for an extended period of time, they're coming together. It's like a family. But San Jose, you really feel that they're in it together from the coaching staff down. They're all bought into it, to the culture. They're all bought into their identity, the philosophy. And you feel that Almeida has told these guys, I believe in you. If we lose, it's on me, not on you. Go out there and play your game. I love that from a manager. I'm vibing with Almeida. So I'm going with San Jose in this one.
Well, the one piece I would say, Chuck, and you know, I think you've been kind of going in on the creativity or the lack thereof with Minnesota. And I've been right with you on that the whole way. The one piece that I think could be an X factor, and we've seen him do that in the past, has been Molino. And the question marks around his health, they've missed him, I think, in the last match. And so if he can get healthy, if he can get involved in this game, I think he's, of course, a hard worker, fits with that same sort of Minnesota mentality that we've seen with that group, or kind of a grinder. But he's got a little bit something different to his game that can bring at least some type of creativity or a moment of magic or maybe, you know, give a guy a little wiggle or get by a guy in the box. And I think he would be, if they can get him back, he might be somebody that could help shift the balance a little bit towards.
But do you think he's going to come in? I mean, he's been out. He's most likely not going to start. And you throw in the conditions, it's difficult to be out for an extended period of time in a tournament and then come in and be as effective as you normally are.
Yeah. I think it's definitely a big question mark, but I think when you look down the bench and they've got some good number nines, but none of them are necessarily going to create their own shot. It's when you're looking at somebody who could maybe change a game or take a moment. I mean, that would be a pretty Hot nice boy. Option to look down and see him on the end of the bench. Yeah.
So picks, predictions.
I'm going San Jose. I'll start us off again. I know. I think Charlie also gave his prediction already.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, I've really come around to the San Jose team as the tournament has gone on. I think I picked them in the last round against RSL, although nobody will remember that, especially Quake's Twitter account. But do you guys see them, by the way, go against the Galaxy and that Earthquake tweet? They are not the the Twitter account you want to mess with. But
no.
But I think for me, part of the reason that I wasn't in on them early was just the amount of risk that they take playing the style of play that they do. But I've come around to it in the sense that in a tournament setting like this, I'm not sure you can do that throughout a full season. And I think we saw that kind of at the end of last year where the wheels kind of fell off and teams were able to figure them out. And I think they just ran out of gas. But in a tournament setting, in a quick setting where you can ride momentum, you can ride the waves and also their depth. I think it's a really tough matchup for any team to play against. So I'm taking San Jose, and I will admit the error in my ways.
I've already said my piece.
So you're picking San Jose, Charlie. I just need, as a producer, I'm producing this for Adrian Heath and his staff. So I just need a clean cut for them to play in the locker room.
Yeah. No
so
chance. Charlie, David,
I'm choosing San Jose. And it's not even close. Even though I really enjoyed Chase Gasper in our conversation, I'm rooting for him. I think he's a
Vote
great
for Pedro.
Kid. Vote for Pedro. But I'm going San Jose Earthquakes.
I can't believe it. You fell into the trap. Adrian Heath's going to win 6-1 and just run that clip. I would be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked if on the fake scoreboards behind in the fan stuff, they just run that clip of Charlie over and over again to get the fans jacked up. At home, never question Minnesota United. I will say this, San Jose, they take that risk in the way they play. They'd scored a ton of goals. They're at their best when the other team wants to be on the ball. The pressing that they do, the chaos that it causes when they turn the ball over, and Minnesota had 35% possession against Columbus. So it'll be interesting, I think, kind of back to the first game against Seattle for San Jose. How do they create opportunities on the ball, interchange, all that type of stuff, rather than just forcing turnovers and getting stuff.
Are you taking Minnesota then?
Bro, all day, baby.
Oh my God.
Hey.
All right.
That's where it is. I got Jan Gregor with the brace.
So it's Charlie, a 1-0 match. Wait, whoa. So it's a 2-0 match?
Or I'll say 2-1 Minnesota.
Okay.
With Gregish.
Adrian, feel free to just cut this out when you show it to the team. Don't let them forget about themselves. There's only two that matter. There's only two experts on this show. I'm not technically an expert. I'm just a host. Saturday night closes up FS1 and 2DN. It's a little channel switch in the middle. And you've got NYCFC against the Portland Timbers. This might be as tasty a matchup as we have. Charlie, Portland cruising against FC Cincinnati. Brain fart from Steve Clark. Let Cincinnati in. But Portland still gets through on penalty kicks. How do you see this matchup play out?
It's no secret. I love the attacking talent New York City have. But I think this plays right into Portland's hands. I have Portland, as a team that's going to sit back and counter. And when we talk about one of the best counterattacking teams, it's the Portland Timbers because of Valeri, because of Blanco. Whether it's the transition game or the counter press, Portland are well situated for this match. I think it favors them. And then Jeremy Abosi is really a confident striker right now. And then you throw in Nyash Gota, who's come in and made a difference. Just being that poacher that sometimes Portland needs at times. Get in the box, be in the right spots, and finish. Jeremy Abobase, I think, is developing as a number nine. You know, he hasn't gotten a proper run of games until this year. And I think he now understands, okay, I need to, this is where I need to make the runs to open space up for Valerian Blanco versus these are the runs I need to make to be on the end of the service from Valerian Blanco and finding that balance. I think he's done a great job and I think he's still improving. He's still, you know, he's had a terrific tournament, but he can be much better and he knows that, which is also going to benefit Portland in the long run. So I'm going to go with Portland because New York City FC haven't been as consistent. They're just, you know, starting to get going. But I think this Portland team is well-tested. They have a lot of experience. So I'm going to go with Portland.
Kaylin,
so I made my prediction too.
We have, I saw that. Thank you, Charlie. Yeah. We have a fan who tweeted in and basically said, Maxi Morales played 60 minutes last game. What level of risk do you take with your talisman in this tournament, which you want to win, but these games don't count as regular season. You're not in the final yet. How do you handle that guy?
Yeah, he's got to start. I think he's got to start. And, and seeing him go 60 minutes has got to give you some confidence to do that. I thought it was a pretty interesting move. I think I said it before, but to bring him on at the 28th or 29th minute in the match. And especially for a guy coming off an injury like that, I think it was a muscle injury as well. That's risky. But I think when you have the subs available, it gives you a little bit more flexibility with the five subs and the three chances to do it, to give him a run. And then they brought him off, actually. So he was subbed on, subbed off. You would never see that in a normal match. But I think with this one, you're going to want him from the start because we saw how much, how important he was and looked like a really different New York City team. They got the early goal, which gave them some confidence. But when he came on the match, you could see it's a completely different team. And I agree with Charlie. NYCFC has some of the most talented stable of attackers in MLS, but on their own without Maxi, they look like individuals. And you see Matrita doing it on his own, or you see Castellanos trying to do it on his own, or Eber searching for that final ball to Jury Schrotti, dribbling two or three guys. It looks disjointed at times without it. And Maxi connects all the dots. He is the brain of this midfield and this team. So I think you have to go with him from the start. And I think it makes them a completely different team. So much has been focused on Ronnie Dyla and his system. And I think there's, you know, something to that. But I think sometimes it can come down to one player makes this team work. And without that player, it doesn't work. I don't know whichever system it might be. If you take Maxi Morales out of that NYCFC team, I don't think it's the same team at all. And whether you want to focus on the system, I think that might be a little bit overdone, where one player, I think he really controls the match and controls the ball.
Well, it's the same thing with Lodeiro, Pozuelo, and Carlos Gil. You take them out of the lineup, that those teams are not the same. They don't function the way that they used to. They're not able to connect those passes and be as dangerous in all manners of the game. So you're spot on with that, Kaylin. Well said.
Thanks, Chuck. Chuck's
Kaylin, always coming back. Official prediction.
Oh yeah, I think this is going to be the. I think this is going to be the best match of the quarterfinal round. I think I agree with all the things Charlie said about Portland, and I think they can win a couple different ways. I actually think when we looked at how Portland played against FC Cincinnati, that's not really a comfortable situation for them because, and I think in some ways this will actually revert back to a more comfortable starting point where NYCFC may have a little bit more of the ball and Portland's going to be able to absorb, take their moments and then use their special players at the right time. So I think it's going to be really close. It's a tough one to pick, but I saw enough from – no, I'm sorry, Chuck. I can't go that route, bro.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Late curveball.
Too late. I saw enough from NYCFC against TFC. I think they got something kicked in. And the confidence that they have right now, I'm going to go with NYCFC. Oh. But, I think they're a team that got kind of thrown aside. I think they were sort of – one of the early favorites from the start of the tournament. And I think one game really can shift things for a team at the right time in the season or in the right time of a tournament. And so I think NYCFC may just keep marching on.
I don't know how many different directions you went with that. you went this way, then you had me feeling, oh man, he's overwhelmingly feeling Portland to, no, New York got it. No, back to Portland.
I'm trying to get people.
I threw the pound out because you were coming to Portland.
Yeah.
Then you just dipped.
Look, have you watched these matches? Every match is a roller coaster, Chuck. You're going to go through the ebbs and flows, the ups and downs. MLS is back, man. You can't expect anything.
I like the idea that Kalen trains us having that experience in short bursts here in practice at a high level so that when we get into the games, we're ready for that back and forth.
Yeah. I just felt that adrenaline, though.
Charlie, so I got you right here.
I got to keep you on your toes.
Oh no, Caitlin, you just missed it. You want to try it again?
No,
we're cool. It's good.
For anybody not watching on YouTube right now, this doesn't make a lot of sense.
You can see our fists up close to a camera, which is top quality content. I'm picking the Portland Timbers as well. A lot of things Charlie said. I don't actually know that they'll sit as deep as you guys have said, because I think they've tried to move away from that in this tournament and they've done it well. Not as much as they did against Cincinnati. As you said, that's not comfortable for them. But I think they'll play higher up the field. I think there'll be larger stretches where they're in possession and they're comfortable with it. It'll be interesting to see how much these go to plays. Do you go two up top or do you push a Bobisi out wide and let him play in? Not at all?
Keep it the way it's been. One striker up top. Have Neish Gota come in as a substitute. Also, I feel like we should have mentioned Eric Williamson and what he brings to that midfield.
Another different
dynamic, covers a lot of ground. He's comfortable on the ball. Not typically a number six, or, you know, he's relied on as for his defensive responsibilities next to Chara, but he can get up front. He makes those runs in behind. He'll make a late run into the box. He is a difference maker for this Portland side because he gives you something different, and he's athletic. He can get across the field, make those tough tackles, but he's very skilled. He's played number 10. He's attacked. As we talked to him before in an earlier extra time, he loves to play more of an attacking role for the Portland Timbers. So when he does get in those advanced positions, he relishes the chance at a shot on goal or that killer final pass.
Well, there it is. Your quarterfinal previews done. MLS is back. This is the knockouts. This is where true champions rise.
You heard it here.
Charlie and Kalen are here for me because they are my true champions. Do you guys want to talk a little transfer rumors right now?
Why not? Yes,
why not?
Yeah.
Obviously, the first one has to do with Inter Miami because it's Inter Miami. The rumor today, Luis Suarez. Do you feel any differently from what you've seen this year so far? From the way the world has played out about who Inter Miami should sign and when they should do it of their big guy. And should it be Luis Suarez?
I'm not as hyped as I once was about Luis Suarez.
Oh,
because
I said that and you yelled at me.
No, I don't think so. just over health and his ambition. So for me, I would prefer that Inter Miami go for a player who's in their late 20s, as opposed to, you know, very close to that steep decline as far as being able to compete at that level. Now, Luis Suarez is Luis Suarez. He's always going to get in, make those runs to be a predator in the box. And he's going to score his chances. He's brilliant in front of goal. But as you get older, that work rate, you know, that influence of I'm going to be, you know, the model citizen, I'm going to show everybody that I'm going to do the extra bit of work. I'm going to show that I'm the leader. So if I'm doing all that defensive work and I'm running back to defend in my own box, that everybody else will and hold everyone accountable. I'm not so sure that's what you're going to get with Luis Suarez. Now, if he scores 30 goals, he scores 30 goals. Great. But I'm not as hyped as I once was, although I think it'd still be a good addition for Inter Miami.
My question comes more to the motivation behind the move. If the motivation is that you've gone 0-5 and you are looking for a quick fix and a big name, I don't think that's a great move to make or a great reason to make the move. Mm-hmm. If you wouldn't want to see making a decision like that you're then are kind of hamstrung by in the long term. And I think if 2020 has any, you could look at it two ways. You can say, all right, we've gone 0-5. this is the worst start in an expansion team's franchise history or league history. And you could take that and say, we need to fix this right now. Or you can take the longer view, which I think I would prefer, even as an Inter Miami fan, would be to continue to stay the course and take your time, because 2020 is a strange year, right? We're hoping to return the regular season, but it's probably going to be a condensed one of some sort and then lead to MLS Cup. But the expectations aren't necessarily, I would sort of drop some of them and say, we don't need to win MLS Cup, or we may not be an Atlanta United the way they came in. And let's start looking at how do we make that. We've gotten a window, at least a peek of what our team looks like in tiny little spurts, but let's make some decisions that can benefit the club long-term. Luis Suarez, to me, as much as I want to see him in MLS, and I think he would be fantastic, I think he would score a boatload of goals. I don't know. I guess it just comes down to an identity, and I'm not really sure which one Miami is. And for so long, it's been, are they the big club that gets the big name stars and David Beckham's the owner, or are they more the Atlanta United model or the LAFC that's going to go after young attacking South American talent and bring them into the fold? So I think it's really it will be revealing in some ways, whichever decision they make as to who Inter Miami is, and I guess how they see themselves.
For me, you have two phenomenal Colombians who are 29 years old for Atalanta, and Duván Zapata and Luis Muriel. Those are more appealing to me, because you're getting...
You think Duván Zapata's coming to Inter Miami?
You never know. Duván Zapata versus Luis Suarez? I mean...
You got to put multiple Brinks on a boat and drive it over to Italy and drop it on his front porch.
You got to do that for everybody. Anybody for anybody that Inter Miami is looking to get, that caliber of striker, that caliber of influence, you got to ride the boat. You got to get the helicopter. You got to get the private
helicopter jet on the boat. Yeah.
You got to do it all. The massive yacht. You got to do the whole shebang and have this amazing presentation to say, hey, be our number nine at Inter Miami, and this is what you will have. So again, there are plenty of options, and like Kalen said, there's plenty of time. Don't rush. Don't rush and make a bad decision.
You got to give Inter Miami credit for this one thing. They've lost all five games. They're no longer in the competition, and yet they probably got the largest conversation of any team on ETR today. So they're doing something right.
Well, they definitely got the YouTube headline, too. Yeah. I mean, we know that for sure.
Yeah. Wait, sorry. Now I have to say Messi's name, James Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Bizarre. I have to say those names, and then
Ivan Rakitic, since he was on the extra time.
For sure. You can go watch that on YouTube, by the way. That interview, go watch that. News out of South America: Domé Torrent is taking over as Flamengo's head coach, which is one of the coolest things that's ever happened. Weird, low key thing. Coached in MLS, and now he's going to coach the best team in South America, and a team that's putting together some really impressive sides. So that's pretty cool. We've got a bunch of questions from fans here. The first one is U.S. Soccer Snob, who says, where can we get the Craval design Black Lives Matter shirts that are pictured about 76 times every broadcast? Hashtag MLS is black. Hashtag MLS is back. Kalen, you got any updates for us?
Not really, actually. I think it will be available, but I'm not exactly sure when. I think it may be sold soon on MLS store, in the MLS store. But I would also make sure you should be following them anyways, but make sure to follow BPC and Warren Craval to find out the exact details. And I'll retweet it too. So yeah, check it out. But the proceeds, I'm sure, will be going to to the Black Lives Matter cause. So, and I've heard a lot of people hitting me up on Twitter and elsewhere, eager to support. I think there was some type of legal issues as far as when can you and how can you and all the setup that goes behind it. And these guys have been focused on trying to get, you know, playing these games and try and win a tournament. So it's been amazing to see what they've been able to do, and that the message has been heard and that people are still eager to support and that this conversation is continuing. So
we had a great conversation on Monday about the coaching vacancy in Atlanta and the potential there. And that's an area that Black Players for a Change are trying to be a central voice for, is how do you get opportunities, the deserved opportunities for a lot of Black players, both from South America, from Africa, from Europe, and from North America, to get the chances to be on a short list for an opportunity like that. It's been too few and far between. I'd urge everyone, to be vocal to your clubs. There are players in the teams you root for that deserve opportunities to step into the coaching booth. And a lot of coaches get that, but a lot of times it's white players, and that's not the way it should be. It's not necessary. I've got a hot take for you from Eric Pfeiffer, Charlie, who says, hot take for the ET crew, Obobese has a higher ceiling than Mason Toy and Albert Elise.
Ooh. That's interesting. Elise is my guy.
Toy is your guy too. And
all three. I like all three. See, with Mason Toy, he's on the decline with his situation right now. Now, he's probably at rock bottom because he's had to fight for everything. And he's had all these setbacks, whether it was through injury, whether it's through Adrian Heath, putting him all the way back at the bottom, having him come back up. And then he came off in the first game and hasn't had a chance since in this MLS is back tournament. So for his development, he hasn't been able to get to start it really after where he's left off. Haven't seen him score a brace against LAFC last year at the Bank of California. You thought, wow, okay, this guy's, he's surprising us. He's making the proper steps to fulfill his potential. Now he's back down. So you got to build yourself back up. It's going to take a while. Jeremy Obobese has shown me tremendous growth. His ideas with his runs, his timing, finishing, his aerial prowess, I think, has always been there. I think he prided himself on getting into the box, finding himself in the right position, making those runs for crosses. But it's everything else that goes into being an elite striker. The hold-up play, the runs, the combination play, the first touch, the awareness. When you're not seeing the ball, if you're defending, how can you still impact the game? I think I'm starting to see that from Jeremy Obobese, and he hadn't shown me signs of that before. So right now, his ceiling is pretty high. It's encouraging. This hot take might be right. Although Albert Elise, if he gets going, although I don't know where his mindset is, I don't know if he wants to be, you know, where his ceiling is, because I think it all depends on his ambition. Does he want to be, you know, in La Liga? Does he want to be in the Premier League? Does he want to be in Serie A? And where does he see himself as a striker, as a right wing, as a right forward in a 4-3-3? There's still a lot of questions with Albert Elise, and it's always been the finished product. So for me right now, I'm agree with my man, the hot taker,
Eric Pfeiffer.
All right,
he gets the pound from Charlie on this one. I'm gonna close out on this one. David Dimmitt, who tweeted at us and said, "Love the behind the scenes audio of VAR at MLS is back." Came online for the previous game. You could hear the referees talking through the review. They made the change to the call. They called the goal off for FC Cincinnati, who had already driven the bus on that one, which was a little bit too soon, unfortunately for them. And he said, if you want more stuff like that, you can go to the pro referees. They have an inside video review segment that they do. That's awesome. So if you have questions about this stuff, or if you're interested in it,
no, some videos, but we want to see. I don't want to go have to search.
No, Kaylin, you're going to get both.
Okay, that's great. But the reason this moment was amazing was that it happened in real time. Right. Yeah. You got to see it during the game. And yeah, it's great to hear the behind the scenes of the referees and stuff like that. But I don't know. You got to be going pretty deep to want to go dive into that one.
Like if you want to be a referee,
for
your job,
you host the video where you analyze refereeing calls.
But that's what I want to hear. I want to hear Chuck going hard and being like, that's a red card, getting after it. That's the video I want. Not everybody, you know, can watch their own videos and stuff like that. But I thought the integration into the match was awesome. And you got a chance to look at it, even using understanding some of the language that they use, which sometimes seems a little bit obtuse. But you see it matched up with exactly what they're seeing and when. I thought also just the idea that it was so decisive and didn't take long. He asked for a replay. It took out one more time, and he's like, I kind of already know this one. And so I thought so much times, look, referees don't always get the credit that they deserve. But to get a peek behind the curtain, to me, came away with more respect, more understanding, more education, awareness of what they're going through and how they make these types of big decisions. So no, I thought it was cool.
The thing is, as cool as it was, I think what we learned from it is that it needs to happen every single time. Yeah. So fans have an answer. So it can't go away. This can't be just a one-time project. And this was really cool. It's got to be there every time. So not only do the fans know, but coaches, players, if they rewatch the game, they go, that's what he was saying and that's what he was thinking. That makes sense. I understand. Versus, we don't know why he made that decision. We don't agree with it. And we don't haven't gotten a proper response of what they were thinking in at the moment.
Yeah.
Now we have that.
I think it would take away from some of the sort of angry and vitriol that we see as well, too, because even if the referee makes the decision again, I felt this way as a player, right? If the referee is able to say why he made the decision, or will at least engage in some type of dialogue with the players on the pitch, the ones that you get frustrated by are the ones that just kind of, you know, tell you like, hey, Kalen, not happening. You know, I'm too good back to even talk to you.
Back away right. from me.
And I've even had referees tell me before, Chris Penso, I remember, told me like, hey, I may have missed that one and I'll take a look at it next time. You know, this is before video review and all that. But I always really respected that. I admired that he would sort of engage with me on a human to human level and that he knew my name. That was nice too. But like, I just think if people could understand what the referees are doing, even if it doesn't go their way, if you understand the logic or the thinking behind it, I think it would mm-hmm. go a long way.
The plan, I think, is to have it online. It took a little while to get it done because, you know, throwing together a tournament at the last second, broadcasting, sure. all that. There was a lot to go on. I agree with both of you. I also think it's actually just more entertaining because it doesn't feel as long. Like, you're watching something, you're engaged. Mm-hmm. If it's a minute and a half review and you're hearing it go on, I think you feel part of it, and then you don't notice that how long it's taken. So it should be fun to watch. Hopefully it continues. There's some really interesting stuff, and maybe we'll do this next time, about referees and how they're affected not playing in front of crowds, playing at these neutral sites, you know, no fans. A lot of the studies that have been done in Europe with their restart is that referees are heavily affected by not having fans as well, and just their level of engagement and the way they call the game. So should be interesting to watch in the quarterfinals. Kalen Carr, you always got to come on ETR because then sometimes he'll name names. Chris Penso getting a shout out here today. Shout out to the Pens. Thank you to Chase Gasper for coming on for AT&T Call to the Field. He crushed it. Pedro Gasper, good luck in the next round. Charlie and Kalen both picked against Minnesota United. There's no chance that team wins. That's another clip for you from Minnesota United. Thank you for taking the time to come on with us. We'll be back on Monday with all your quarterfinal reaction, your semifinal previews. We've got a late night episode, Brown Liquor Special, coming up next week to hit the semifinals. As they close out, MLS is back, and you can see these two all weekend on MLS Today and MLS Postgame. Have a good weekend.